Blog Talk Radio.
Anyway, this is The Recruiting Animal. It's January 23rd, 2013. And I don't have anything special or relevant to talk about today, but I have to fill this space. So I'm going to tell you about something I find funny. It's big news in Canada right now. The most famous manager in this country is an Indian chief named Teresa Spence. And she's the chief of a small Indian reservation way up in northern Ontario. That's the province I live in. And it's called Attawapiskat. And it's far away from any city, and it's very, very cold up there. And last year, the member of parliament for that area took some videos of the reservation, and it showed how run down it is. He sent them to the media to force the government to spend more money. But what happened was, it turned out that the government had paid them about $100 million in the last 5 years, and they had another $20 million or so from a nearby diamond mine. So the government forced an audit of the band, and it showed that the record-keeping was atrocious. No one knew where the money went, and Chief Teresa became the most famous incompetent manager in Canada, the most famous incompetent manager in Canada, but she was smart. She didn't run away and hide. She went to Ottawa, our capital city, and she set up a tent on an island in the river there, the Ottawa River, and she went on a hunger strike. And the Ottawa's cold in the wintertime, but it came out, you know, she wasn't sleeping in the tent. She's sleeping in a hotel, and she's not on a total hunger strike. She's actually eating fish broth and tea, and I think some vitamins she's taking. But it didn't matter. Every major politician in Canada has paid a visit to Chief Teresa, and she was included, even though she's just from a small place, when the major Indian chiefs met with the prime minister, and later on they visited the governor general. The governor general represents the queen in Canada. But she didn't stop her strike. She said she was going to starve to death unless the prime minister and the governor general met with her together in the same room. But the queen, whom the governor general represents, she doesn't run this country, so they refused her request. Now, some politicians are trying to work out a deal to get her to start eating again. And I got to tell you, this is big news. This is big news here every day. And I guess the lesson is sometimes that the best defense is a good offense. When you're called on the carpet, you better come in swinging, because it doesn't always pay to be contrite. In real life or here on Jerry, Jerry, what show is this?
The Recruiting Animal. Ready?
Yeah! Wow, thank you!
Hey! Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
Do you have anything special to say to me personally before I introduce our guest?
Where's my money?
Jerry, calling him Jerry. Gary Chaplin, are you there? Hold on, let me open it. That's open. Are you there?
I am. Hi. How are you, animal?
I'm okay. Gary Chaplin. You know, I live right at Chaplin Crescent in Toronto. Hey,
we were destined to be together.
That's a good sign. Yeah. Now you're in Manchester. You're calling from Manchester, England. Is that correct?
I am. Yeah.
Okay. Now, I don't know, there's been some talk. You don't know me very well, but there's been some talk about me wrecking people's brands. So I just want to know if you need a safe word in case you see your brand is in danger. We can change the topic. You tell me. You need one?
Oh, I think you'll understand if I'm getting a little bit knocked by what's going on there, but I'm cool. I need no safe word.
Okay. What about a song? Did you bring a song to sing?
A song to sing? But you really don't want to hear me sing.
No, no, we sing at the beginning of every show. Do you know, is there any song you know the lyrics for?
Oh, how about Mr. Big Stuff?
Yeah, I only know a bit of it.
Like
Let's go. You lead. I'll follow you, and I will. You know, when I say I'll follow, I'll follow. You lead off.
Mr. Big Stuff.
Big Stuff.
Who do you think
Who
you are?
Who do you think you are?
Yeah, I think that's more than enough, really.
That's it? Gee whiz. You know what? You're a chicken. You're just like everybody else. You come on like a big shot, and you put those muscle pictures of yourself there. I've never had a guest with a physique like that. You're a boxer, and you won't sing. Come on.
Hey, this is just part of the course of British guys. Yeah, with British
No, boxers are supposed to have personalities like Muhammad Ali and those guys. Okay, let's just move on to your elevator speech. Who are you, Gary Chaplin?
I'm an executive headhunter. I find people that people don't even know exist, and I just do it in a little bit of a different way.
Okay. The newspapers in England say you make 200,000 pounds a year. Is that correct?
Some years, yes. Some years, no.
Okay.
Right on.
How much is 200,000 pounds in American dollars or Canadian?
That's about $300,000, is it?
That's all? Oh, boy. Knocked you down a peg there. Okay. Your Twitter address is... Your Twitter address is GC_CHAPLIN, and your web address is GaryChaplin.com. Is that correct?
Yeah, no. Twitter is GC_Headhunter.
Oh, Headhunter, sorry. GC_Headhunter, that makes much more sense. And I got them confused. Sorry. Anyway, your website, you know, I got some complaints about your website before you even came on the show. Maureen Sheriff asked, why isn't...
I'm there now. I can't read anything. I'm going blind.
It's too dark, isn't it? I agree.
Too dark.
Way too dark. It's like a cave. That's number one. Maureen wants to know why your phone number isn't there.
Because I got it was on there, and I was just finding out that I was getting nothing but calls all the time. And, you know, I need to be able to make calls. I need to be able to screen who I need to speak to. And I was just spending 80% of my time answering calls from other people.
There you go.
If you need me, you can email me. I can get hold of you.
Yeah, I got another question from Resume Strategy, but I'll just tell you what it is, and I'll put it on hold till later. He recommends putting your birthday on your resume. Is he freaking nuts? We'll get to that. Jerry Albright wanted to know, what does Gary think of big data? And we'll put that on the burner as well, okay? What I want to know is, you say that a search consultant typically works 7 days a week and often clocks in 80 to 100 hours work each week. Is that right? Is that true?
Yeah, definitely.
How many calls do you make a day?
Oh, some days only a dozen. Some days it can be well over 100.
Well over 100 calls? Tell me a day that you make 100 calls. What kind of content are those calls?
This is normally just trying to engage interest in a role. These are calls to candidates. I'm not making 100 cold calls to businesses. But this is engaging interest in a role or updating people that have sent CVs through, telling them yes, telling them no. So they're fairly quick and easy calls.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, you mean they're admin-type calls?
Yeah, that kind of thing, yeah.
Okay. You know, I want to get to that cold calling, but first I want to know, in your level, you work exclusively with senior executives. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, senior management and C-level execs. So in sterling terms, I guess kind of 80K upwards, which is US, like $140 and above.
Uh-huh. Okay. Do any of your candidates at that level have visible tattoos? Because you say you work with all generations.
Hey, I'm sure they do, but, you know, I don't normally do a strip search of my guys.
Visible. I said visible tattoos
visible
on their necks or throats or their hands. No way.
It's a long time since I've seen one. Only some of the women have little things on their hands, but no, not on the whole.
Really? The women? Okay. Now, let me see. Now, here's something. You say that knowing the name, like we had someone on last week, she was a very good guest. She does not like cold calls. And other people also said they don't like cold calls, that people don't have a chance to process the information. They prefer an email, and then they'll call you back if they think it's of interest. But you say emails don't work. We'll come to that. You say, but you also say knowing the name of your target's business and job title will tell you very little about them. Unless you have done research on each target before contacting, your chance of being ignored is immense. So you have to research every prospective recruit. That's what you're saying. Is that right?
Yeah, you need to make sure that you know exactly who you're about to talk to. You know, the same with this show. You don't come on this show blind, do you? You do a bit of research. You understand what your ladies have in for.
They do.
Only the foolish.
They do! That's why the show suffers! Okay, so give us... Actually, let me switch. Let's come back to that. You don't believe in sending emails. That's not the good way to approach people. That's what you say, right?
No, emails can work at times where if you're trying to engage someone on a personal level, then you need to do that over the phone.
You said only 5% of unsolicited emails get open. If they go through LinkedIn, 15%. The typical response is delete, right? You say a faceless message is not the way to begin a professional relationship. It doesn't tell your target why you're approaching her specifically, and that's what you have to do. So you only make cold calls to people. Is that right, or were you lying on your website?
No, I do both. I do both. But if it's somebody that I'm seeking to do business with, they'll get a phone call.
Okay, is that a client or a candidate?
That's a client. That's a client. Candidates, sometimes the only way you can get hold of a candidate by email.
Okay, so... Hold on. You said you don't need LinkedIn. Your value proposition is that you've got 7,000 names in your black book, and you spend your whole life meeting face-to-face with people, and that's what your value proposition is. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, that's my USP, and that's the USP of a lot of headhunters.
You know what? I asked Mitch Sullivan, what's a USP? Everybody thought I was crazy. What's a USP? Not everybody knows.
Unique selling point. That's what sets us aside.
Unique selling point. That's what I call value proposition, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you think LinkedIn is kind of garbage for the level of people that you're working with. Is that right?
Yeah, maybe not quite garbage, but you know what? There's only about, LinkedIn will say that if C-level execs, like less than 20% of people are on LinkedIn, so you're only going to get a small section of the marketplace if you're seeking to get hold of C-level execs.
Okay, senior people are not on LinkedIn. That's your claim. But you actually say more than that on your website, okay?
Yeah.
And you also say, don't approach here. Now, you were backing away, but here, I'll give you a quote. Don't approach people through LinkedIn. Businesses have to sell themselves to get any interest from quality candidates. Your initial contact will offer little scope to sell if it's through LinkedIn. Most people have preconceived ideas about your business, and they might not even respond. So if you just contact someone electronically, you don't have any chance to sell, right?
Yeah, exactly. You've got really minimal chance to sell. You've got no means of being able to handle objections, understand what they do. All you've got is a very, very limited number of characters to be able to send through on LinkedIn, and it's too easy to delete a message.
Okay, but you know, you backed away from the nice, strong statements you made on your blog. How often do you contact people, for potential recruits, for the first time through email?
For headhunting, I will contact them perhaps a quarter of the time to be able to get a means of being able to speak to them, so just to ask for their number.
Man, I got to tell you, you shouldn't have said what you did on your site. You didn't say that, okay? You did not say that. And what about through LinkedIn? How many times will you, I don't know how to put it in percentages. How often do you contact people through LinkedIn?
Very little.
Hey, Animal.
Okay, because you say,
Animal, can I interject here?
Go ahead.
This feels really like a series of very intimidating statements here rather than an enlightening, engaging interview.
Ask him a question.
How's it going?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Nice. I'm feeling the love now.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, back to you, Animal.
Yeah.
No, yeah, if you think I'm going in the wrong direction and you're crinkling your potato chip package there to tell me so, ask him a question. I'm going on. He says, if Jerry, I thought you'd love him. He says, don't contact people through email. Don't contact them through LinkedIn. What you need to do is sell to people. And he actually says, I think he said 50% of the candidates he shortlists and present to companies, They say no. The first answer he gets is no. He has to sell everybody. The sale begins when the customer says no.
Way more than 50%. Way more than 50%. I would guess, but at least 75% of people will say no to start off with.
Wow. Okay.
But that's. I think that's more of a British thing than an American thing. British are very reserved.
So they kind of play coy with who they want to interview, and you got to coax them a little bit like you're dating.
Yeah, I don't even think it's that premeditated or dare I say that smart. I think it's just the automatic response for a British person. If you ask them something, is to say no, and then they think about it, and then you call them back a couple of days later, and that's when they've been thinking about it and they want more information. That's when you get the opportunity to sell to them. If all you've got is the ability of email, they're probably just not even going to open your second email.
Hmm. Interesting.
You've
been watching.
You
watch Downton Abbey.
A little bit. I'm not a big fan, but yeah, I've seen bits.
Yeah, I just wondered. We've been watching that.
That's how we all live in England. We've all got that kind of house and servants and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Okay, back to you, Animal. I kind of blew it there, and I'm sorry.
No, you didn't. You survived, Jerry. If I'm going the wrong way, I like people to let me know. There's lots of people on the line. Does anybody want to ask Gary a question at this point? 10, 9, 8. They always say I don't let them talk. I'm giving them lots of chances. Okay, so give me an example. When you call somebody, I want to hear a story about you called somebody, he or she said, no, you know, they have an automatic no. In other countries, they have an automatic yes, but it doesn't mean anything. In Britain, you're telling us they have an automatic no, and it doesn't mean anything. So person says no. I want to hear about your approach. Do you have a typical approach, your typical cold call? And I want to hear what happened.
No, you know what? All I will typically do is I'll get hold of somebody. I've introduced myself that I'm a headhunter. First of all, you make sure these people can talk, because quite often they're in open plan offices or they're in cars or anywhere where they can't talk. You mentioned the role you're dealing with, and you then say, can we talk further?
No,
and this is when they'll typically say.
I have a fetish. I like to hear exactly what you say. Come on, you're making $300,000 a year. You must know what you say. Tell me.
Yeah, Animal, I'm Gary Chaplin, a headhunter. Are you okay to talk at the moment?
Yeah.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Animal, I'm calling you today. I've been mandated by a large international retail business looking for a multi-channel director. I'd be keen to talk to you about the opportunity. Is now a good time? And this time that the British guy will say, actually, you know, I'm quite happy in the role that I've got now, so keep in touch, but now's not the right time for me.
And what will you say back to him?
That's fine. Let me take a number to call you back at a private time, and perhaps we can catch up in a couple of weeks.
And what happens next? Does he give you the number?
Yeah. 9 times out of 10, they'll give you the number, because these guys realize that it's worth keeping in with headhunters. And quite often, you know, they need to, if they are an office or they have got people potentially listening to their call, then, you know, they need to, I guess, say that no, but you need to give them some means of being able to speak to you a couple of days later.
And
so,
you give them your email address so you can get them your contact information? If that's the case, he might want to contact you himself.
Yeah, I will always give them my number and my email, but I always make sure I get them then. You know, a good recruiter always keeps control of the conversation.
Uh-huh. So you get off. That might take just a minute for that first call then, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you'll let it go like that. You won't argue then and there.
No, there's no point arguing. There's no point getting antagonistic on that first call. If a guy is really interested, then he will drive that conversation, or she will drive that conversation. Far better to then call back in an evening when you've got their mobile number or their home number, and you can call when they are more likely to be able to talk, and then you can start doing it. And then you can start finding out more about them. And if necessary,
so
going on the approach,
call,
of course,
your
they
first
know.
Call, your first call is at work. Your second call is always after hours?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if I've got their mobile number, their cell number, as you guys would say, you know, then I'll call in the evening, because you know
what
they're
time?
Going to be either at home or
what
anything.
Time?
Well, anything after 6 p.m.
Hey, Gary. It's me. It's me, Jerry.
Hey, Jerry.
I thought it might be good for a point of clarification, since you haven't been a regular on the show. Animal never really actually has recruited anybody. Okay, so this stuff is new to him. He doesn't understand the whole call you once, call you later, ask some questions. So just bear with him. He wants
Jerry,
to get in. Yes?
Jerry, you don't let the guy go get away with I'm not interested on the first call. You don't. You
sure
have some more questions.
Sure.
You just hang up like Gary does. You don't ask questions.
Dude, I'm so smooth. It's all subconscious. I don't even know what I say, man. It just happens.
Okay. So back then to Gary. Jerry just said it's not true, by the way, but it's a
it
memory
is
lapse. So
what am I supposed to say?
Lying.
Oh, you most certainly are interested. Stay on the phone. That's a lie.
Sit and have a fight with him on the phone. That really engenders some professionalism.
No, you could say you don't know. You know, you don't know you're interested, or you are interested, sir, but you just don't know it. Let me tell you about this position. That's an echo here. Anyway, so look. So you call the person back. How do you start out? What do you say to him then?
Well, you then go through, and if they give given you a flat,
no, you say,
start
I called you about this position. How do you open it up? Because he told you he's not interested. How do you start your
fun conversation. I'm being cheeky and about, you know, we mentioned, well, I'd like to give you some further information to find out who else you may be aware of that's potentially open to this kind of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
You give them some more information, and then you can soon gauge whether they're interested themselves or not. And if they give the slight inclination that they are wanting more information, then you can just turn a question around to them and just ask them, you know, what would it take to make you interested? What kind of thing would make you be tempted to leave XYZ Limited?
Okay,
I mean, everyone's
and
got something. Everyone's got something.
Okay, they give their fantasy. You know, if I could carve, you know, Peter Lefkowitz says, if I could carve a new position just for you, you know, what would it look like? So the person gives you that information, and then you want to sell them on the position that you're working on. Because you said people have a lot of biases. They're narrow-minded. They don't realize that they don't really know. So give us an example of a time that you sold somebody on a position when he or she said no to start off with.
Well, quite often it'll be preconceptions about the business that you're recruiting for, because we all hear company names, and as soon as that business is mentioned to you, you have this premeditated idea of as to what that organization is like. And unless you've actually been inside that organization or know people that have, that impression will often be wrong. So you need to sell around that, and I don't sell too much. If somebody really isn't going to be right, or they're not going to be interested, there's no point in me wasting my time in trying to flog a dead horse. But if what they're looking for is going to start getting into the area that role is going to offer, or another role that I know about is going to offer, then you can start talking to them and just pointing out the aspects of whatever role and how that fits in with their
okay,
dream position.
Okay, no, let me interrupt you. So, I mean, I'm totally on the wrong. I read your blog. I was very excited. I said, here's a guy whose whole approach is based on turning people around. And what you're telling me is no. Every British person or half of them say, you know, an automatic mindless no. And when you call them up, you know, you just give them, you pretend that you're looking for a referral and you give them a chance to bite. And if they don't, you don't push them. That's what you said,
no,
right?
We push them. If the role that I've got is something that they are, A, they can do, or it's in an area that they want to move in towards, then we'll push them. If it transpires and they're not interested because it's not the right area for them, we won't push them. We won't flog a dead horse. But,
okay,
you know,
before I lose my audience, I want to know somebody. You must know one story when you talk to somebody, he or she was good for the position, you knew they were good, and they didn't have a really good excuse for not being interested, in your opinion, and you sold them. Now, let me add, you brag about what you're bringing. You say, oh, a junior person can't do this job. They need somebody who really understands the field and the jobs so you can sell the job. Everything in your blog said you know so much, and that allows you to sell. And now you're backing away from that. Don't make a fool out of me, okay?
You know, okay, example. I had a big financial services organization. We were looking for a CFO. We targeted the two biggest rivals, and the guys there just weren't going to be suitable. So what they wanted a woman into the business. Okay, they can't ask for that, but they wanted a woman into the business. So we highlighted two CFOs of relevant organizations, neither of which were wanting to move. One of them specifically because he didn't want to work for that business. We found out who she'd worked in the past, and there were three or four people within the organization that she had worked in the past. We could get them to, I guess, provide testimonials with regards to the culture, and I spent an hour with her gradually turning around to at least go meet these people. And that's all I need to do. I just need to get these people to go meet their reporting manager or the HR director, whatever it needs to be. You've got to persuade them around and find those common areas of interest to be able to persuade them to go and see these
okay.
These
so
guys.
You find you, if possible, you find people they know inside the client company and have them talk to them. Is that right?
Yeah, because at this level, you know, eagles fly with eagles. You know, all FTSE 100 or S&P 500 CEOs and CFOs will know each other. The guys two or three levels below, the amount of matrix crossovers there has been with people lower down the organization, VPs, junior VPs that have worked with big people from different businesses, you can soon go and point out who is also at that organization. And that's the first way to be able to get people to start listening
to
you.
Yeah,
you know
what? I feel like cutting you off because your accent or maybe the poor quality of the phone line, I'm having trouble understanding you. I don't know if anybody else is. Oh, yeah, on Twitter there. If you're having trouble understanding him, he's speaking English, but let me know, okay? And I'll try to make them shorter statements. I won't let him go on. That's what I'm doing now, and that's why I interrupted him. Now, you said something else. You said if you have an in-house recruiter approach somebody, it won't impress them. It has to be someone impressive to make the approach. Is that right?
Yeah, I guess if an organization had a particularly impressive in-house recruiter, then that may work. But the majority of in-house recruiters do not sell their organizations well.
Well, you don't sell it either. You just backed away from that whole thing, but we finished with that, okay? Now, you said on average 80% of people we shortlist said no on the first approach.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. It must be, you're right, just it must be a mindless
habit.
How do
you keep track of that number?
I don't know. It could be 78%, it could be 82%, but certainly eight out of 10 people that we speak to will say no to start off with.
Okay. So you don't respect generalist recruiters either for the same reason. Am I right?
Hear, hear.
You made a remark about it.
Yeah, you know, the people can claim they can recruit from 10K to 300K. You can't. It's a totally different skill set. It's a totally different way of approaching. And a business looking to recruit somebody at 10 or 15K, you know, isn't going to want the same level of service as somebody's at 300K. The candidate's not going to expect that. The approach is very, very different. They're not going to want to invest the time in being able to understand exactly what these people can bring to the business. They're just going to want to stack it high, sell it cheap.
Okay. Now, here's the actual figures. You said research by LinkedIn and Google discovered that only 15%, 1/5, of the employees in leading organizations are on LinkedIn. Over 40% of the people I have placed in the last 18 months are still not on LinkedIn. For C-level professionals, it's even higher. Okay, so that's what you're saying. The people you recruit are not on LinkedIn. Is that what you're saying? And that just means
correct.
The senior people.
Yeah, yeah, and even
but
those that are on LinkedIn, quite often not active on it.
Okay, yeah, you said if you send them a message, it takes 6 weeks to get a reply. Is that right?
Often, yeah. If someone isn't active on LinkedIn, it depends how often they log on to LinkedIn. The amount of people
doesn't LinkedIn doesn't LinkedIn forward the message to their own email?
Not for everybody. That's why I have mine set up, but I know a lot of people that don't. It depends what email they use as well.
Okay, I got to tell you something. You're caving in. Some of your bold statements that impressed me, you're caving in.
I've got an interjection from the Twitter stream, Gary.
Yeah.
Seems some of the ladies across the globe, by the way, are thinking that you're possibly too hot, too much of a beefcake to actually work 100 hours a week because, in their assessment, you've got to spend a lot of time at the gym to look that good.
They're right.
What are your thoughts
right.
on that?
I'm flattered, but I'm in the gym for between 6 and 6:30 a.m. in the morning, so I can still put in a good day's work.
Okay, so you knock it out in half an hour and get back to it then.
No, an hour and a half. So
an hour and a half.
Between six and, yeah.
And you work.
But you're a boxer. Go ahead, Kathy. Go ahead.
You work 100 hours a week.
Not
every week. So 2 hours. So out of that week, 10 hours or 14 are spent at the gym. You present. You call 100 candidates a day.
Mm-hmm. Not every day.
Do you connect? Do you actually speak to 100 candidates a day? And
then
you present a slate that isn't even well-rounded without females on it, and 80% of them are rejected. I don't understand any of that.
And Gary, by the way, this is Kathy, a very attractive single gal in California.
She's
go ahead.
She's not single.
What?
She's not single, although
are you married?
A feeling that's...
I'm engaged.
Not single.
Oh, engaged. Okay.
Okay. He's married, and he says he's a family man. He's an avid cyclist. He's a boxer, and he's working those hours. I couldn't figure it out either.
He spends 3 hours a week with his wife and kids.
Yes,
certainly keeps everything happy. Not
okay,
enough time
no,
to get into
impressed.
An argument.
When I saw that first picture of you on your Twitter site, I couldn't believe it. I said, did he just put somebody else's picture there? I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, you're in fantastic condition. What kind of boxer are you? Are you a good boxer?
Hey, well, I've only had one fight. It was a charity fight, but I won, so I've got an unbeaten record.
Oh, you're only at one fight? I thought you were a pro. Oh, so you like you do the cycling more often. You're a more peaceable type of guy.
Yeah, I just did the boxing as a charity venture for
2 months.
Oh, okay.
It was very impressive. It was very impressive. I
have a
question. I gotta tell you. Go ahead.
Do you use steroids?
Hello? Do I use steroids? No, not at all.
Okay.
All natural.
Okay. Okay, good. Now, you have a fee structure you call contingent retainer. You get your pizza in 6 weeks or a cash back guarantee, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, the kind of answers you're supposed to give are not yes or no. That was an
okay.
Open question.
Okay, we just these are the guys I used to work with. They came with a fantastic concept that the majority of executive search takes 24 weeks to go from start to finish. So they realized that, you know, most businesses were unsatisfied with that length of time to get an exec offered and accepted. So for certain roles, and that's majority of roles, they put in place a system where you could have a retained mandate. They would guarantee delivery in 6 or 8 weeks. If they didn't, then they got 100% cash refund of the retainer that had been paid.
Hmm.
And how often do you have to give that back? You want to say you don't have to?
No, you never have to, Matt. I guess this is the challenge. You just got to make sure that you deliver on that time, but also you don't take on the assignment that you can't deliver in 6 weeks.
Oh, really? How can you always estimate? How can you estimate accurately?
You can tell. You can tell which roles are going to take more than 6 weeks to firm which ones aren't. You know, you know
it's
from
how
your
do you
own.
Turn down an assignment? How do you turn down an assignment?
You won't turn it down. You just won't do it through that continuing retainer. You'll just do it through a normal retained mandate where it's going to take a little bit longer.
Okay. What's the easiest level for you to recruit for? Like, what's the easiest job that you find to recruit for and the hardest?
I would say at the moment, the easiest will be a CFO between, say, 100 and 150,000 sterling. The most difficult would be something really personality-focused, where you just got a really finite number of people that are available and it's being able to catch those people. IT is not a good area to be able to recruit in at a very senior level because people have followed different tracks and what one business wants, another business doesn't have, and these guys can be more difficult to get hold of. And HR people are easy to pull out of businesses. HR directors tend to be very, very well indoctrinated in their organization. They spend their life selling their organization to their employees. Therefore, these guys, again, can be hard to try and pull out their organization and sell the benefits of a different business.
You know, Maureen told me yesterday that the farmers always say they love their cattle, but then when the truck comes up to sell them, you know, they just push them on and they go away. So I don't know if I trust that statement about HR people being so religiously devoted to their organization. Now, here's the exact figures that you were giving. You say, I have over 7,000 personal contacts in my little black book. I've spent 18 years meeting between 10 and 15 people per week, even allowing for re-meetings. I've never heard that term, but I like it, re-meetings. That's not an animal bad word. Anyway, allowing for re-meetings, that's over 10,000 professionals met. The knowledge it brings cannot be replaced through any form of short-term solution. In every position I have been retained on, at least one shortlisted candidate was thought of within a couple of hours. In many cases, that person was submitted immediately and the process completed in days. It sounds like you never have to make a cold call with a book like this, but you do.
Yeah, you still have to call these people, and you know I've not spoken to all these 7,000 people within the last month. Some of these people haven't been spoken to for a couple of years if they've not come on the radar for a role. But you know what? You know, it is not, knowledge is power. You know these people. You know who's going to fit with the personality, with the culture of the business, as well as the actual skill set of the role demands. So there is no substitute for knowing these people and having met these people.
Are you wishing you had a safe word now? Because I'll still give you one if you
I'm
think
starting
you
to drift a little bit.
You're starting to drift, Jer?
Yeah.
He's like you. He meets Jerry. Will drive 6 hours to meet his placement.
Why wouldn't you?
Okay, but this guy Gary, he likes bringing in people too. Do you bring them into your office, or will you meet with someone in a Starbucks, or is that too?
Yeah, no, you know what? I will do more interviews in coffee shops and hotels. You get a far more candid impression of what this person is like when they're in a more natural environment. You put somebody across a desk in an office, they're going to go into interview mode, which they're going to mean they're going to be a lot more close with regard to how they answer questions. You know, you go and sit, meet them in a hotel lobby or in a coffee shop, they're going to talk to you like a normal person. You're going to get a far greater insight into their personality.
Yeah, I was surprised you actually say that when people attend an interview, they can adapt their personality short term to meet perceived requirements of the job. Really?
Absolutely.
After a period
of
time, this person will return to their natural behavior, which may not be the behavior that is most appropriate for this role. So you believe in personality testing then, right?
No, I believe in gut feel on personality. Personality testing is fine if you benchmark with against other people that have done that same test. But I want to see the person's real personality, understand how they will fit with the other individuals in that business. And if you're in a formal interview situation and somebody's there prepared for an interview, dealing with that meeting like an interview, they're not going to let themselves open up and they're not going to give as candid an answer. So,
you offer something called behavioral vector analysis. And it enables leaders to speed read their people. I love that. That's a great saying. It analyzes the job and the person and tells you where it's a match and where it isn't. So, for instance, where the person is going to need development to fit that role. And you say it shows natural behavior, work behavior, and extreme stress behavior. So in your blog, your website, you say that the test can reveal natural behavior. Now you're saying that's only available in the interview. Is that right?
No, it can do. I think for the interview process, you have to have that gut feel. You can get these things backed up by things like the BVA test. Where the BVA test coming really, really useful is if you've got, I don't know, six members of a board of directors and you bring in the seventh, to be able to get mapped, understand where their personality strengths are, understand which personality you want to mirror and which personality you want to complement, you can then use these tests to be able to find those different vectors.
Okay. Anybody else who's on the line want to ask a question right now? Jerry said, I'm drifting. I'm getting boring. So, you know, I'm willing for some new blood or it's a new point of view. 5, 4,
dude,
three,
this is the part where, you know, you're kind of reminded that a half an hour show would be like jam-packed because you went off the edge at about 12:33.
You think so?
Yeah. Gary, what do you think? Is this going on too long?
I guess people need to start finding something that I've done in my past that sparks a bit more interest.
What are you interested in?
Oh, I don't have time to be interested in anything, but I like my fitness. I like my family. I love my little daughter.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I enjoy meeting people. I enjoy socializing. Mm-hmm. I enjoy drinking. I enjoy punching people in a boxing ring.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
How'd you become a recruiter, Gary? I have to point out that I hammer people over the head now. I say, bring stories. And, I'm not able to even coax them out of you. So that's something. You say you're a raconteur in your Twitter profile. I thought, hey, I'm on Easy Street today. But you're not offering us any stories. So but start off with telling us how you became a recruiter.
Same as most people, I fell into it completely by accident. I was going to be, from the age of 7, I was going to be an accountant. One of my father's friends had a Porsche. I wanted my dad to have a Porsche. My father turned around and said, Jeff's an accountant, you'll never have a poor accountant. So from the age of 7, I was going to be an accountant. I studied to be an accountant, I passed my exams to be an accountant, and within 2 months of being an accountant, I realized it was boring. So I went to another agency to try and find a job. They turned around and said, you're a gobble little shit. Why don't you come and be a recruiter? We'll give you a 50% pay rise in a company car, and hey, I've never looked back.
Oh, really? I don't know what they said to you because it was sort of muffled. It sounded kind of rough. Okay. So if Jerry say, you know, Jerry wants to know, like, not just your personal life, what do you think are the hot issues in recruiting that you'd like to talk about, aside from what the notes I've got prepared?
What do you think about all this Twitter recruiting, Facebook recruiting, social recruiting?
Oh, I got a whole bunch on that. He's hot. He's hot on it.
You like it?
Yeah.
He said,
yeah, you know,
Twitter,
you know,
specifically Twitter.
Twitter is a great source. I think all social media is a great advantage to the recruitment sector, but it helps us do our jobs better. It doesn't replace the job that we do.
That's a
you said
answer, Gary.
You said when you were interviewed a few years ago, you said this year we've won £200,000 of business through Twitter. That's $300,000.
Yeah, easily.
What was
Jerry?
That?
He made 300. His company made three. He came in. He was working at this other company, and he said it was a bit old fogey-ish. He came in and started making social media a standard part of the business, and he said that year that he did the interview, they made an additional $300,000 through Twitter. $300,000. Twitter. You've got him here.
Man, that's just unbelievable. I mean, what kind of approach do you have? I mean, you just follow people, hope they follow you back, and then you call them and say, thanks for following me. You tweet your jobs. Do you try to find witty stuff to say about the community, content?
You need to engage with people. You know what? If you try and ring people, you can't get a hold of them. They won't return your calls. If you try and email them, they ignore it. But you try and connect to them through Twitter, you've got a greater chance that these people will buy into you. They'll understand you. And with Twitter, they can see your personality as well. They can see the person you are.
Hey!
You're more likely to get that buy-in.
Kathy.
I'm sorry. I just don't get it. He doesn't think LinkedIn is valuable, but Twitter is where the high-end executives are hanging out. I don't.
She does have a point, Gear.
Yep. You know what? But you will. Yeah. I don't have stats for you, but I would say there are more major global entrepreneurs on Twitter than there are on LinkedIn.
No way. Maybe in England, but.
Yeah, maybe in England, around the US. Maybe LinkedIn hasn't exploded here, or Twitter is still in that honeymoon period. But you look at most major entrepreneurs, you know, they'll be on Twitter. You'll be able to engage with them.
Oh yeah,
Twitter.
The venture capitalists are—they're all on Twitter.
Yeah, okay, guys.
Well.
Yeah, they're on there. But how can you actually search through profiles? I mean, how do you find who
to connect
with?
Why they made that $200,000? There's he made a statement. There's got to be some stories or facts behind it. Ask for that.
Look, man, that's obviously an inflated statement, and I don't want to corner the guy.
Okay.
That's not the kind of guy I am.
Okay.
Somebody off there. Okay. I don't want to corner him. That's just not my style, dude.
He said social media is not a conversation down at the pub. At the same time, the biggest tip Gary can share for using social network is be natural. How can you be natural and not be down at the pub? That's what natural is, isn't it?
Hey, knowing you're recruited in 100 hours a week, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay.
So how
okay.
do you – I mean, do you use, like, hashtags to find – the keywords, which would be part of people's conversations, and that leads you to their profile?
The biggest benefit Twitter can bring, it can get people to find you and connect with you looking for jobs. You'll get people who will then spread messages you put out there to people they know that are likewise looking for jobs. So I get a lot of candidates coming to me through Twitter, a lot of execs looking for work or would-be execs looking for work that will connect to me.
But you're famous.
Through Twitter.
You're famous in England. Are you famous in England? I mean, just generally speaking, not for any specific incidents. Just, are you a famous headhunter?
I'm a known headhunter. I'm not famous. I'm a known headhunter.
In your sector, at the senior levels, everybody would say, oh, I know him. Okay. Now, Jerry,
so they're not finding
you
based on your profile then, right?
Your
profile is headhunter, father, husband, business owner, gym addict, charity road cyclist, 42 under 42, raconteur, charity boxer. So people aren't finding
you know,
through that.
Yeah,
I mean,
I had some good questions and I'm forgetting them, but I got to warn you, Jerry, I might get cut off in a minute, and if you stop hearing me, you take over till I get back, okay?
I don't take over anyway, man. We're finally getting there, okay?
No. Date of birth. Resume strategy wanted him to justify that. He says put your date of birth on your resume. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, okay, in this country we now have age discrimination where people are not allowed to discriminate against age, but we all want to know how old people are. You know, if somebody's telling you...
But we've got to know how old these bastards are.
Exactly. You got me, Jerry. You know what? If somebody's made vice president by the time they're 25 in a major organization, that says something. If it took them 25 years of their career to get there, that says something completely different. If somebody's going to be put off by an individual's age, they're going to be put off whether they discover their age when they first read the CV or when the guy turns up for an interview. If you think that, or if you end up being too young or too old for a job, you would rather know as soon as your resume has gone over, rather than when you take a train or a plane inside of the country to go for an interview, you walk in and the guy goes, shit, this guy's 50, I'm not interested. You need to know that. If you don't put your age on your CV, it comes across that you've got a problem with your age, and therefore other people should have a problem with their age.
That would never fly over here.
Yeah, well, never. You might not have a problem with your age, but you know that everybody else does, and that's why you don't put it down.
Do the women put their height, bra size, weight, stuff like that on there too?
No, only if you can get away with it. Hey, we used to take photographs of every candidate that came into the office that got outlawed as well.
Really?
Yeah.
You say on the resume, ensure that the transferability of your skills is clear without calling them transferable skills. How do you do that? Can you give some examples?
You know what? If you're a finance director and you've been looking after group accounting, make sure that it's set how you've been doing it. Don't point out how those skills will transfer to other sectors, because you don't want to have to have anything explained. It's like having a joke explained or having a story explained. If it's not obvious, it's not going to be relevant, or you've not written it well enough. You know, somebody's going to give your CV 20, maybe only 10 seconds of looking at it before they decide whether it's going to go in the bin or it's going to go on the, I'll spend 30 seconds tomorrow looking through it. If you've got to spend most of that 10 seconds explaining why that last job, or it looks irrelevant, is actually very relevant, then you've lost your emphasis. You're going to get in the bin. You need to make sure that what's relevant is sold big and proud. People having to describe transferable skills mean that the skills aren't transferable.
Okay. Now, you keep stressing that it's worthwhile for these executives to have a positive relationship with the recruiter, you know, help them and things like that with referrals. You know what? If you know someone's worth money to you, you're going to call them even if you don't like them, even if he or she has never helped you. So they don't have to help you. And you say, oh, it'll keep you top of mind if you help him. He can be the nicest guy in the world and make you millions, but you won't place him unless he's placeable, right? So all
Absolutely.
This stuff about establish a relationship with a recruiter, it's just nonsense.
No, you need to establish a relationship so that we know about you, we know your strengths, we know who you are. If we don't know you, we don't know much about you, then we can't put you forward. We can't spot which opportunities are going to be great for you.
Yeah, you don't want to know about him. You want to know about who he knows, right? That's what it sounds like to me.
But it's also knowing about him.
Okay, so you know what? Just in case I do get cut off, we've got another 10 minutes, and I'm enjoying the conversation. Everybody always criticizes the show when I think it's good. You're making big money. You got something to tell us, even if I have to pull it out of you, like a dentist pulling teeth. But if I get cut off, you know, at 1 o'clock, Jerry's show starts. It's the after show, and they rate you and me, and you're not allowed to stay on that. And I'm not on it either, but I just – lately, I haven't been telling people in advance, and they don't read the material I tend them to read.
In advance of that, I've got to say you really need to bring something to the table here, or the scores are going to be probably middle of the road.
Yeah, we hate being middle of the road.
I hate it.
I know something that could take the scores off to the sky, but I don't want to bring that up.
Let's do it.
Gary does. Nope, I don't think it's that relevant. It's not relevant to my interest. I want him to teach me to be like him. That's what I want, and that's what he's doing. That's the relevant thing here. Isn't it?
I don't think he uses safe words. I'm sorry.
What'd you say?
He doesn't use safe words. You do. You guys will. You will never be like him, or vice versa.
Why not?
Okay. What about big data? Is that, you know, the people are talking about it all the time, and does it mean anything to a guy like you, big data?
No, really. It's not something that yet particularly talks about in the UK. I guess we're not a big enough place to have that. I mean, you know, data sets aren't huge over here. I mean, it's not something that's particularly big over in the UK. It's not something that's a hot topic at all.
Now, do you advertise your business in trade journals and things like that?
No. So
you don't do any print advertising?
Not at all. No, I haven't for a long,
like,
long time.
No, it's like CIO or CEO magazines? Nothing
no.
like that?
No, not
and
at all.
And so you just generate your business by cold calls and word of mouth. Is that right?
Yeah, and social media and website and, you know, no specific advertising. I don't even advertise roles in paper-based media.
Uh-huh. Really? And you say it's best if a candidate comes to you as a referral from somebody else.
Yeah.
Not necessarily.
Yeah. No, that's great because you're going to get that third-party endorsement. You know, if I know you and I like you, I'm not going to introduce you to somebody who I think is an arse. I'm only going to refer somebody to you that I rate and I think
is
good.
You know what? If somebody, my stupid colleague comes up to me and says, you know any recruiters I'm not happy here? And I'm thinking, boy, I hope he leaves. I'll give him your name.
Really?
Thanks.
Yeah, see, the recruiting animal sent me, you know. Maybe he's good for you. I think he's a jerk. I mean, so I don't think a referral like that means that much. You say if you toe the line, it gets boring. If you get coverage by being different. So do you have a media strategy to get people interested in you by being different? I mean, I don't agree with that, by the way.
No, I think you've always got to stand out and be a little bit different in the world. There's so many people who do what I do or pretend to do what I do. You've got to stand out a little bit differently. And you know what?
Yeah, but you're not different. Yeah. You're different. You put the picture up there. Very few people are in the kind of shape you're in. That makes you different. People will remember you for that. But you're a headhunter. There's a million of them. I don't see how you can make yourself stand out. You tell me how.
You could try getting yourself into international media and be picked up by 400 newspapers around the world. That gets you known.
How do you do that? I'm asking, do you advertise or do you have a public relations person to put you in articles? What is it? What do you do?
No, I took the ill-advised route of mouthing off to the wrong guy 15 months ago.
Yeah.
Then,
you know what?
He then sold
me out.
Should
we talk about that? I have to say, I read he got an email from some job hunter. And the guy had sent it to 4,000 recruiters. Is that right?
Yeah, well, it wasn't 4,000. It was about 500 or 600 he sent it to, but the paper.
600? Okay. So you sent him back a snappy comment telling him that he's too stupid to get a job. And you sent it back to everybody by accident, right?
Well, I sent it back to 23 people. They just embellished the email. They embellished the story.
Oh, wasn't such a...
Yeah.
How did it get in the newspaper? How did that become such a big story? Because you know what? I saw a guy on Twitter named @SmartCEO, and he said, this is what I read about you when I Googled your name. And he said, you know what? I would have done the same thing. I have to tell you, that's my inclination, too, when I get these moronic, unsolicited resumes, you know, that say, hi, and... You know, it's sent to the guy's personal self and stuff like that. I do that, too. Why was it such big news?
I don't know. Somebody knows people who knows people who worked at the Sun newspaper. They decided to make it a big news story. You know what? Everyone hates the fat cat. This is what they build me as. You know, it must have been a slow news day. But I had every single comment that I've had said exactly what you'd have said, animal. I would have done the same thing. You've done what we wanted to do. You wanted to tell the guy to go and, you know what, rather than blanket emailing you. I was just stupid. I pressed send rather than pressing delete.
You know what?
People
on,
do.
On Gmail, I know Gmail's not classy enough for you, but they let you recall the mail. I think they hold it for a minute before it goes out so you can unsend it. So
yeah,
that's something you might consider.
That would have been useful.
Hey,
you know what?
Okay.
I can't fight against it because you know what? It's been the making of my last 15 months. You know, when you're a headhunter, you need to be well known, and by hello, high water, I'm now well known.
Yeah, I know, but do people, did it draw, actually, like Chief Teresa, I don't know if you heard my intro, she's famous she's for doing something dumb. I mean, and so she's getting everybody catering to her. So if people come to you and say, I read that article, I thought you were hilarious, you know, I want to do business with you.
Yeah, but you know what, people do flock to me because they want straight talking. They want somebody who's not going to bullshit them. And they just, every single person I meet, whether that's million-pound-a-year CEOs or junior people, they will all ask about it. And they will all sit there and say, we've done the same thing. There, but for the grace of God, it wasn't us. We've all thought the same thing. You just said what we all thought.
Okay. And on that happy note, I was really happy to meet you after all this time. Because I did
you
right after that. Anything you want to say as parting words?
No, just thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.
I like meeting you. Thank you. The wrong music. Jerry, I'm sorry. Here we go. Jerry?
Animal? Get out of here!
Okay!
You know, I get the feeling that one of these days I'm going to be the only person on the after show.
I'm here.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Jerry.
Who else is here? Anybody?
Fleek is here, but I'm mostly just listening today.
Chris Fleek?
Yep.
How's Minnesota?
Cold, but otherwise pretty good. How are you doing, Jerry?
Good.
How about you, Kathy? How are you?
I'm doing great.
What'd you think about the show, Chris?
You know, it was a tougher one to listen to only because, you know, when the listeners are all experienced and talented recruiters, you know, and you hear a lot of things that make your antenna go up as saying, well, wait a minute, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It kind of gets the show off track pretty quickly.
Yeah, but see, I think some of that is, you know, Animal just expects such specific canned approaches that really, when you're performing at a level such as Gary or anybody, everything is different. It always changes. There is no one way to do this or guaranteed this is my process for that. I mean, even myself, and I'm not claiming to be an expert, but I don't have a standard way of doing anything other than paperwork after a placement.
Right.
Anything in the middle is just, I go from intuition and reading the tea leaves, you know?
Yeah, I think the reason that it's hard sometimes in a case like this is when you have an international guest, the customs might be different in England. And, you know, when he talks about LinkedIn and usage of LinkedIn and versus Twitter, I mean, he might be exactly right, but it goes against the norms that we're used to.
I found it interesting that you put somebody's birthday right on their resume, and,
yeah,
you know, if this guy's too old for the job, you'd want to know right away. That's amazing.
Yeah, we might put that off the piece of paper, but yeah, I mean, it certainly happens. But, yeah, over there, that's crazy.
Yeah, craziness. So what are your scores for the guest and then for the host?
I'm going to go, I thought it was a decent show. I thought I'm going to go a 75 for both today.
Okay. Gotcha. Kathy, what'd you think?
Well, it was so elementary, and he contradicted himself. They're just, I mean, I really didn't get where he had the time to do all this stuff. There's just, and his numbers sucked. I'm sorry, but.
His numbers suck?
Yeah.
He says he's doing 200 a year, which is 300
a
year.
Okay, but that's putting in, according to him, 100 hours a week. So
he kind of corrected that later and said, not always. When was the last time anybody worked 100 hours a week? I mean, really.
I did that like 10 years ago when I was at Sodexo. You know, I wanted to prove myself and all that. But, you know,
I've worked 60, maybe 70 when I was just getting my stuff started, and I needed to get somebody placed.
You're doing great, and I know that your goal is to work less hours and do great, as is mine. I mean, I don't know. I just, And the information was so elementary. It was like teaching someone how to recruit. And but then that's Animal's fault for not asking more probing questions.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel sorry for the guest, actually. I mean,
don't feel sorry for him.
Well, I think he was embellishing on what he does and his experience. I don't know if I believe any of the numbers, including the money.
Well, who's going to get on there and say, you know, I barely paid my bills last year?
Right, that's true.
But see, I think the more successful recruiters, I believe Gary, I believe he's a successful guy over there, probably makes a ton of money. $300,000 is a fantastic income. I don't care where you are.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot of people at that level don't really know. I mean, they just do it, you know. They're not, he's not there to just make stuff up. You know, some stuff works for him, and I would think that I could even myself, if I forced myself to, probably somehow make a placement with Twitter. But it would have to start with unfriending or unfollowing everybody I know. And,
right.
Because I don't need HR tips and resume stuff, and I don't need top 10 management strategies and white paper. I don't need any of that. But to really do that, you'd have to start all over again. So I've already written off Twitter anyway.
Yeah, I have too. I don't use it here, except for when I listen to the Animal Show, really. So
then Facebook. Who's breathing so heavily here?
Yeah, someone.
Who is it?
Blake?
No, it's not me. I'm on mute.
Sorry, it was Rebecca. I was thinking about something and put my hand over my face and caught my mic in the same way.
What were you thinking about? Hi, Rebecca.
I was thinking about your comments on Twitter, and I think that you're discounting the whole thing. I've done business with ING based on finding the president on Twitter and being able to connect with him and getting a candidate in front of him. So
mm-hmm.
I think that...
So how much time, though, would you say you spent on Twitter in direct correlation to that result?
That's true. That's a good question.
I mean, I could dedicate my life to finally proving that I made a placement on Twitter, but does that then prove its efficiency? No way.
I think that... Of the tools that you use, I think the biggest problem with recruiters, and this could be an hour conversation, but the biggest problem with recruiters is that they're all talking to each other rather than talking to their candidates and their clients.
Right,
and so that, I mean, everybody gets pulled into it, and there you are. It's a general back-slapping society.
Yeah, I mean, I have several executives that follow me, and they're clients, and they're not in the recruiting industry. So, you know, they're out there. It's just how are you engaging them? So,
well, I mean, technically,
Sure. Technically,
everybody on Twitter is doing business of some sort in the real world.
Right.
So I'm not saying that real people aren't on Twitter. I mean, most of these people are real. You know, but by and large, it's never been the quickest route to making something happen.
It's not the quickest route. That's the problem, is that if we can't see an immediate return on investment, we don't play with it for longer than 30 seconds. So,
well, yeah. It's been a couple years ago, placed someone that I met from having a conversation with his girlfriend in line at the Walmart. For real.
Yeah, I believe
I think it. Like another friend said, hey, man, give me your card. I need you to take a look at my resume. And the girl said, oh, what kind of resumes are you looking for? And I'm like, oh, I'm a recruiter, you know. She's like, yeah, awesome. You know, my boyfriend does X, Y, and Z, or he works. So, but is my life now dedicated to hanging out at Walmart just in case I could play some son of a bitch off there? No. So Twitter blows, always has, always will.
You know, I just a quick story. Went to a high school basketball game last night, and for whatever reason, I was tweeting about the game, which I never do, but I was compelled to, and didn't think anything of it. Woke up this morning, and my high school basketball tweets had been retweeted, I think, 3 different times by what appeared to be high school students. You know, had never even considered the fact that kids that go to the high school that was playing might actually look at these tweets that I was putting out there and retweet it. But what it got me thinking is, I wonder just how many of today's kids, high school kids, college kids, are using Twitter for fun right now, but are going to make that a much more effective recruiting tool in, say, 5 and 10 years.
I'll tag along that one and say that I've got a university student that we are going to place as an intern for an NFL team out of the United States. And the reason why they'll hire her is just for fun. She went out and started tweeting about their games and has over 1,000 people following her. How could you not hire her? She already has a hold of your brand.
Yeah, and I know somebody, in fact, a good friend of mine, just got a position with Beats by Dre. And the reason she was able to get that position in marketing with them is because she had built up her brand in the local music scene in Seattle. And, you know, that was evidence to them that, you know, she's connected, she gets it, she knows how to use social. So absolutely that can happen.
Yep.
And I'm not discounting that Twitter is cool. I mean, it is cool. It's interesting. It's fun. But, you know, I need to be placing somebody this week and next week and last week and next month.
Yep.
And Twitter isn't my quickest way to get that done. Yep. Some of my customers are on Twitter. I tweet back and forth with some of my clients, many of them. I think all of them probably. So, I mean, there, people are out there, but there's no real effective way for me to, you know, without shutting off every connection I already have or starting a second profile for this is my business profile. You know,
it's
stuff like that.
It's not meant to be like that, though. It's meant to be an overlap. But, you know, again.
Yeah, but see, I don't necessarily even want my candidates to see all the stuff that I tweet, because I tweet stuff about how, you know, Obama sucks, healthcare insurance sucks. You know, I don't need, you know, I don't need them in my whole, this is more my personal world, you know. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Did I win?
Yes, you won. Hands down.
Hey, Rebecca, what are your scores for the show today, if you have a scale of 0 to 100 for the guest?
So I like the guest, you know, 80, 85. Let's go 85.
Uh-huh.
Would have liked to have seen more questions about, you know, the future and where they're seeing trends. So animals, 75.
Mm-hmm. Kind of dropped the ball there on some of the questions. Kathy, you still there?
Yeah, I am.
You're just busy gazing at your engagement ring, aren't you? Blinded by it.
You should see this thing. My God.
Oh yeah. When is your date then?
We don't know. Could be tomorrow. Could be like next week. We have no idea.
You know, I've said what Dr. Laura says, and I believe it to be true.
What?
You're not engaged until you've got a ring and a date.
And a date. Well.
Yep. I'm just throwing that out there. I'm being controversial. I'm excited for you, but
thanks. We're buying a second home. So that helps.
Anything but actually getting married sounds like it's on the agenda.
Kathy, do you have a date yet?
No.
So what? I'm going to have to talk to him because everybody's asking us this, and we're doing everything else at the date. So you're right. I think.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a ring and a guy that might marry you. But I don't think that's being engaged. Hey, carry it on. I got to take a call real quick.
Okay. I would give the guess, I would say about, I don't know, 70, an animal 70. Who else is on the line? Who's still there?
There's lots of people there.
Okay.
There's lots of people on
animal.
The line.
Sorry about that. What'd I miss? I just had to take a call.
Nothing. I just gave them both average.
How come everybody's talking now? I gave them a chance to talk during the show.
I think I know. It's a less hostile environment right now. The conversation is free-flowing. It's not a one-sided interrogation.
And I got to tell you, Daryl Disco is saying, I wish someone would say how they recruited on Twitter. I'm going to give him a link. I've had that, okay? So this guy can tell it's true. He just said it's there. He made $300,000 off Twitter. I need some backup for that. But I don't get what all the complaints I'm getting. Resume strategy says don't start the questions with you said. What's wrong with that?
What's wrong with what?
Saying you said this, you said that. What's wrong with that?
I don't know. Hey, dude, you're really globbing all over my time.
Bye.
Get lost.
Okay.
Well, I want to know how he knows the term safe word. I mean, I read the 50 Shades of Grey, and that's the big thing for the dominating and submissive relationship. How does he know about that?
It's been an animal kind of a... It's been said on here before, even before 50 Shades of whatever.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess it's more in vogue. I didn't know about it. Okay.
All right, Kathy, now that we've resolved the fact that you technically are not engaged, what is your score for the guest?
I gave it 70 and 70.
Oh, 70 and 70. I'm sorry, I missed it.
Yeah.
Oh, and that's why Animal jumped in, because his score was kind of going down, and then he wanted to kind of liven it up. Hey, Blake.
Yeah.
We need some scores from you, man.
Thank you.
What do you think about the UK chap named Gary?
The best part about him was the clothes. Everything he said the last minute was probably the best.
Are you on Skype or something, man? Your phone sounds bad.
Is that better?
You
the same phone I was talking to you a while ago on.
Yeah, it sucked then, but I...
He downplayed LinkedIn that, you know, you can't really get the people off there, but somehow or another he can make $300,000 off of Twitter.
Could he have been really in a strategic mode, knowing full well that every one of his placements comes from LinkedIn, and he hasn't made shit from Twitter, said, hey, that's where it is. I mean, why wouldn't a smart guy actually try to continue sending his competitors down a dark alley? What's the value of him saying, yeah, man, Twitter is lame. It's all on LinkedIn. I made millions on there. Like, frankly, I would prefer every one of my competitors to spend 16 hours a day on Twitter. Go for it, kids.
Right. Good.
I like the guy. I couldn't understand everything he said, but I love listening to people like that. It just reaffirms how much smarter I am, you know, and I just don't think I am, so...
You know, I've always thought that the UK guy's accent is cool, but a British gal, man, it just turns me off. Why is that?
Mick Jagger says they're so prissy. That's why.
He's disgusting.
No, he's not.
He's crazy. Blake, what are your scores, man?
75 for the guests and 80 for animals.
Now, why a higher score for Animal when clearly he dropped the ball?
No, I mean, from everything that I heard, I thought he did a pretty good job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, considering I haven't been listening for a little bit, so it's, not a lot's changed.
All right. Man, I've got 4 interviews going on with different clients and stuff this afternoon.
Yeah.
That was my week last week, but it was in a week, not all in one day, so that's good.
Well, it kind of sucks, and I mean, I can't start drinking until like 8 o'clock.
Well, that's true.
You know, you got to stay, you know.
Why is that?
You're
not one interview.
No, I treat my work just as a doctor or a lawyer or a pilot. Never have a drink and mix my... Yeah, I never have a drink if I'm talking to candidates, ever.
That's why when you called me last night, you had to have your child talk to me. You started drinking.
I was just out of the hot tub.
Dude, that was so funny.
I'm usually pretty mellow when I get out
of
the hot
tub. All right, well, wait a minute. Does Blake have a date yet? Let's be fair here.
No. So, Kathy, Jerry calls me last night, and he's like, hey, man. And I'm like, what's up? And the next thing I know is, Blake. And I'm like, yes. When are you going to pay my daddy? Put his child on the phone to find out about getting an invoice paid.
I do stuff that really most other recruiters just wouldn't do.
What did you say to her?
I said, hey, I'll give you 50 cents if you ask this guy, when are we going to get paid? And she said, no, no. I said, how about a dollar? She said, okay.
And then she asked me, and then she gives him the phone back, and he says, no, you're only getting 50 cents because you didn't stay on there till he answered.
Oh, Jerry.
Yeah, my kids are going to be recruiters by the time they're, I don't know, 14, 15.
That or bill collectors. Jeez.
That's
well,
true.
Turns out that's half the job of recruiting in this economy. Yeah.
I have to ask a question.
Right.
I have to ask a question. I heard a number of times on this show that my questions are too elementary. A number of people said it. What do they want to hear? What do they want to hear? I don't know. What's sophisticated?
I think they want to hear.
Kathy's got a good. We're tired of hearing somebody's recruit call, dude.
Don't you want to know if an in-house recruiter who's making $50,000 a year and a sophisticated executive headhunter making $300,000 are using the exact same words? I do.
My guess would be no, they're not.
What's not elementary? What is not elementary?
See, here's what I think that maybe you don't get, okay?
Tell me.
When you get to a certain level of this profession, you're not making a ton of cold calls. You're just not. You're dealing with situations. You are putting things together. You're following up with people. You're being referred by another guy. So the conversation starts at step two. And you get us bogged down with, what do you do if a guy says he's not interested?
Yeah.
Well, if a guy tells me he's not interested, I say, all right, man, enjoy the day.
Yeah, number one, Jerry, you got people making cold calls for you, okay? I don't have servants doing it for me. Secondly, go ahead anyway. Thanks. Nobody there. I just want
Gary there has a researcher.
Who?
Gary Chaplin.
Uh-huh.
He's got a researcher. Everybody's got a researcher now.
I think I'd want to know, what does he do different to identify, you know, talent in hard-to-fill positions? That's what I'd want to know.
You had a chance to ask him, Kathy?
Part of it, Kathy.
You asked him if he was using steroids.
What?
I know, because it was so inane what he was sharing with us.
Why is it that to be successful you have to work in hard-to-fill positions?
Well,
how about just master the art of the obvious?
What about volume? What about with you? You need volume. So how does he generate volume?
That would have been a good question, Animal, instead of what do you say if somebody says no?
What's that question? How do you generate volume? I was going to ask him about how you do business development because it's Chris Fleek's question, and he was there, and he didn't ask it himself. I gave a million chances for you guys to speak up. Speak up. Speak up. No,
speak up,
people. Silent until they get to Jerry. Then they can complain that I didn't say what they were thinking.
People are comfortable here, okay? It's a safe house.
Okay, I'm out. Thank you.
Hey, it's good to hear you today, Animal.
Yeah.
Yeah, great show. Looks like your score's coming in right about 72, by the way.
I got plenty of complaints on Twitter, too.
What?
I'm reading all the stuff on Twitter. Why didn't he say this? Why didn't he ask that?
Why didn't you?
Okay.
Yeah.
You have to know that we're all experienced recruiters, and we don't need to know what his elevator speech is.
Yeah, there you go. He needs to tell your guests should come on, tell us who they are, what they do, and why they believe they're successful.
Exactly.
They don't know. Jerry, they don't know. You can ask a question like that and you won't get any answer, okay?
I would know.
Yeah, because I've asked you a million times.
We all know why we're successful.
Yeah, people should listen to your first appearance on this show. Yeah, they'd see you. You listen to a good show then.
Dude, I was so much younger then. I had bills to pay back then.
Older than that now.
Thank you.
You guys are all great. I hope the rest of the week treats you well.
There's more people. Oh, maybe not.
Who else is here? Anybody else have a score to offer? Anybody? There's somebody that hasn't spoken up, isn't there, Animal?
No, I think that's it. They've left, the other guys.
Karen, Resume Strategy's on the line. She's not saying anything.
She's not on the line.
I think she is.
Oh, she isn't. 1905, and that's the girl who stopped bugging me for her Starbucks card. I will send it today.
Who's Starbucks card?
I have
Thanks,
a Starbucks
Animal.
Card sitting here for over a year. Rebecca. Sorry. She did something nice, and I wanted to show her my thank you. So I bought it, but I never sent it.
Really?
Yeah.
But you're a procrastinator.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
Animal, when are you going to make that big announcement?
I don't know, Jerry, but I'm off your show now. You take it from here.
Is he
What's the
married?
Big announcement?
Am I allowed to say anything, Animal, about it?
Our personal conversations are our personal conversations.
Ooh.
So you do admit that we've had a personal conversation about a big announcement?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Is All it right. good or bad?
Can we characterize what your big announcement
Yeah, it's not that big. Okay.
All right, guys, I got to go check the mailbox and see if anybody sent me a shitload of money for just sending them a resume. It happens, you know.
Have a good week.
Enjoy the day,
Bye.
People.
Don't let me down.